The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Art Talk Golden Bay with Grant Knowles, where I talk to the artists about their art practice, what inspires them, their journey, and all their little secrets and passions. So come on a journey of discovery to find out firsthand the world of art, brought to you by the Art Vault Takaka. Good morning and welcome to Art Talk with Grant. And today I've got B. Freitas in the studio with me. Good morning, B.
Oh, good morning, Grant.
Hey, welcome to the show. And good to have you here.
Yeah, thanks. Nice to be here.
I love to talk to artists, and especially artists that people haven't really heard of before or haven't come across before or know. And you're pretty unique. Well, we're all unique, but you're pretty unique in your art form, in a way, because you're doing weaving on a loom, or several looms, probably only at once, and you've been doing this for a while. Tell me, what inspired you? I want to start. You know, what is it all about the loom that inspired you to get weaving?
I think I really enjoy just the machine of it. It's such a beautiful machine on its own. And so sitting down at these big industrial looms, they're made of wood. They're often made of a beautiful native wood. It feels like a whole experience to be in. It feels quite different from other fiber arts like crochet or knitting, where the main thing you're working with is the actual fiber. Whereas when you're sitting at a loom, it is really a whole experience, the sound of it. And I just find it quite beautiful.
So how long ago, when did you start?
I think, like a lot of fiber artists, it's really more of like a spiral for a long time. You know, it starts really young. So for me, I've always just been interested in knots and in fiber, and I liked to plait, and I liked to plait hair, and I played with lanyards, and I made friendship bracelets, and I was really good at that. And I taught myself to crochet, and I taught myself to knit, and it kind of just spirals to this love of fiber. That was very young, and I got my first loom maybe 10 years ago, and just played on it. Really small loom, a little table loom, four shaft. And I'm just a bit of a geek about things in general. So when I get into things, I tend to get a little bit obsessive about things.
You're all or none.
Yeah, exactly.
Good.
So
good.
Yeah.
I like it. That's a sign of a true artist. was that in New Zealand or?
Yeah, that was in New Zealand. Mm. Yeah.
Yep. So you originally came from the States to live here, and you've been here for a bit more than 10 years, obviously. It's been a while. I met you when you... Yeah, and yeah. So tell me about the fabric, the materials you use within the loom work, you know, because... And I don't understand much about looms. I've got a lot of questions, actually. Looms have shafts, and that's the other thing I was interested in.
Yeah, so a loom has... Well, there's lots of different kinds of looms. Some looms don't have shafts. Like if you're making a tapestry, you'll be simply weaving a piece of, you know, a stick with some thread on it. You'll be doing that by hand in and out of different threads coming down very carefully and slowly, whereas the looms that I'm working on have shafts, so they have basically frames that pull up certain numbers of strings, allowing you to add more thread in between them in that crisscross pattern. So it's hard to explain, but imagine... there's that up and down motion on a loom that you control using your hands or your feet, and those are the shafts. And generally, the more shafts that a loom has, the more opportunity for intricate patterns.
So four shafts means it's four times four? Or is it
four really? Shafts just mean that you've got four, that each thread has four different opportunities to get raised or lowered. So if you have a two shaft, you're going to only be able to make essentially like a crisscross pattern. Once you have four, you can do some simple patterns, a simple twill. And then once you start adding more, you just, yeah.
So does that mean that you've got a big pile of stuff that you've created in a corner of your home that is all experimental?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hard to pull it apart and maybe chop it up and make it into other clothing or something?
Absolutely.
What do you do with all that?
That's a really good question. I'm starting to play around with, adding on bits of handwoven onto things that I've sewn. I'm not particularly great at a sewing machine, so I'll just do it for myself. But you do end up with lots of samples.
Samples, right. You've decided to work a lot with silk and natural fibres of cotton, is that right?
Yeah, among other things.
Hemp. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm, like I said, I tend to geek out on things. So I like to feel what lots of different fibres will feel like. I'm really interested in sustainable fibres. Obviously, being in New Zealand, a really sustainable fibre would be wool. But I have noticed that a lot of people have sensitivities to wool, myself included. And because of that, I've been really interested in what else is out there that we don't often use. So whether that's, I love linen and cotton and hemp, but then you've got so many other fibres from the same category of these, like bast fibers they're called, which are fibers that are made directly from a plant. Mm-hmm. So you've got rose fibers, you've got pineapple fiber. There's so many things that you can make.
Like harakeke is another one. You make the mucka.
Have you worked with
mucka or harakeke?
Not a huge amount. It's a very short staple fiber, so that means that it's hard to make very thin and very soft things out of it without blending it with something else.
Right. So there's a lot of blended fibres?
There's a lot of blended fibres.
And do you put things like, possum fur in it and stuff like that, or can you?
Yeah, if you're in the process of making your fibre, so that's another step, you get into spinning,
You haven't stepped back there yet.
I have.
Of course you have.
But it's a lot of effort. And I think if you're knitting and making jerseys, it's a great thing to do. But at the scale that I'm doing, I'm limiting my hand spun fiber to inlays, to like accent parts of my weaving.
Yep. So you don't have a mulberry tree?
I don't have a mulberry tree. I'd love one. I've got some silk cocoons that were sent to me to play with spinning, but it's hard work. Like I said, it's it's a spiral. You get sucked in pretty quickly.
Have you played with unnatural fibres at all?
So you're thinking of like processed.
Funny things that are recycled and things like, copper is actually a natural fibre.
Yeah.
Or a natural substance. Mm. Copper, wire, plastic, recycled plastics, that sort of thing.
I haven't, but I've seen some really beautiful wovens done using copper fibre and then it's shaped afterwards. It's quite stunning. There's a whole fibre family of other cellulose fibres like lyocell and tensil, rayon, which are originally natural fibres. They're just broken down to their cellular level. And use, and I find those really interesting.
So do you study a lot on the internet or in books or anywhere you can find it and talk to people? Is there a guild, weaver's guild?
New Zealand has a lot. We've got Creative Fibre, which is a huge organization in New Zealand with quite a lot of really skilled weavers. And then, honestly, I've learned a lot through Facebook groups, amazing weavers online who support each other and share patterns and just share a lot of information. There are weavers in New Zealand who are really master weavers. One particular who has helped me a lot on my journey and answers questions that I have about set or fiber or, you know, any technical questions. She responds quite quickly.
So if you want to make a pattern, a specific pattern, do you have to draw it out first, or do you, how do you go about, say you wanted to do something with a, circles all over it or something like that? And it might be impossible, but...
No, it's, I mean, it's, you can make circles, but you think you're making circles out of squares. So when you have a lot of shafts, those are the sorts of things that you can do.
So you've got a 32-shaft loom, right?
Yes.
How do you memorize all that? Because it's just, you know, you'd have to, with a pattern of 32 different...
So once a loom has more shafts than... So a loom that has, say, four shafts, you may have six treadles being like foot pedals that mm-hmm. you can push. Once you start getting up to... 8, 10, you'll maybe looking at 12, 14 pedals that you're pushing with your feet. Once you start getting above 16, you can't actually manage to move those shafts with your own body. So I have a 32-shaft loom, but it's actually a computer-run loom, and think very simple computer, like...
pieces of paper with holes in it. That's
exactly
where they were invented, those computers, right?
It is. So it's essentially a player piano.
Yeah.
And so all the computer does is I go onto the computer and I find what's called a draft, which mm-hmm. is like a pattern for a woven piece. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'll use it just as is. Maybe I'll adapt it based on exactly what I'm wanting. And then I'll input that draft, that file, into my computer Dobby, which is my computer loom, and I don't need to remember anything after that. I just can weave, and I'm using my one pedal, and it's just advancing the pattern. So when you sit and you watch me weave at that point, I'm moving quite quickly, but the effort is 98% in my setup of the pattern and my setup of the loom.
So do you really love doing that, or do you like going back to the old school of six pedals?
I think it's I like having both options. Yeah. I have one 32-shaft computer Dobby loom,
yeah.
Which is like my brand new baby, and mm-hmm. I have another beautiful New Zealand-made Countermarch loom, which I rescued just from here in Golden Bay, from you, Grant. Thank you. I always have both looms warped up. So being that they're set up ready to weave, or I try to have them both so that I can really put my brain into working on some intricate patterns and pushing my skill and challenging myself. And then I can always go back and just move through something really easy, that I don't need to think too much about. And it's really nice having both options.
And the warping up. Now, I know that's nothing to do with, going the speed of light.
The opposite, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Warp speed.
Nope.
So
that's funny. That term was written by somebody who had never done warping on a loom.
Tell me, what is warping?
Okay, so... I'm trying to set up my loom. Hmm. So I am first taking my spools of thread and I'm dyeing those threads the color that I want them to be. So that's a totally different thing.
Oh,
so
wow.
I do on my own dyeing.
Okay.
And so once I've taken all the thread that I need for the loom, that involves lots of math, figuring out exactly how much of each color and all that, then I'm putting those threads into cakes of yarn, so balls that I can easily pull thread out without them knotting, and then I'm putting all that thread onto the loom to begin, and I'm winding that onto my back beam, and that, so you're thinking I'm setting up maybe 25 meters of warp on my loom, and I've got maybe sometimes 700, 800, 900 threads going 25 meters, so I need to set all of that up on my back beam of my loom without tangling it. So I'm doing that in 2-inch segments. So that's what you call beaming, and that's part of warping.
Wow.
And then once I've done that, I'm pulling all 600, 700, 800, 900 of those threads over the loom, and I'm I'm threading them through little, they're called heddles. So it's like basically through the eye of a needle 600, 700, 800 times on the correct shaft. So if I'm using 32 shafts, this one thread goes through shaft 24. The next thread goes through shaft 30. And I'm using my phone now to follow my pattern and get it correct, because obviously you can't mess it up. It'll ruin your pattern. So I do that, and that's threading. And that one takes the longest and is my least favorite part of it.
Yeah.
And then you take all those threads and you thread them through your reed at the front, and that's what you're using to push forward your threads, and it keeps your threads apart and nice and tidy. And that's a bit easier, but you're still doing that.
That's that wooden thing, two wooden things and lots of little...
Yeah, like a little yeah, that metal thing. That gets,
yeah.
And then you tie up those threads at the end on the weaving beam of your loom, and then you can start weaving.
But you've got 25 meters, and you can make a thing 25 meters
yeah,
long.
Yeah, yeah. So
if you want.
It's worth it making a long warp.
Oh, yeah, same amount of process if you're going to make a short one or a long one, right?
Essentially, but then you're stuck with a really long warp, and your brain is going, I'm so excited for my next project, but you've still got 10 meters to weave, and you have to get through it. But it is. If you can weave fast and you have a plan for a long warp, it's definitely worth it.
So how long would something like that take you to wear? A day or two?
To set up?
No.
When I was working full-time, being, children at care, maybe 5 hours a day, I'd call that full-time, 4 days a week, it would take me about 3 weeks to set up my loom. No, sorry. It would take me about a week to set up my loom, and then 3 weeks to weave off a whole warp. So I could get through a warp in about a month, and that was when I was really doing production. About a week to set up the whole thing.
You know, to hear it like that is really interesting, because that's only part of it too, of course. I mean, that's the dyeing, which you just referred to, and you use natural dyes, presumably, or...
No,
I use good color fast dyes.
I found that natural dyes, you're still using a lot of chemicals regardless of what kind of dyeing you're doing.
Yeah.
And
okay.
You're not going to get a beautiful, vibrant blue using a natural dye. Although it's fun to play with
indigo.
Both.
Indigo is interesting.
Yeah. It? Yep. Mm. Natural dyeing is a whole other amazing rabbit hole to go down.
Speaking of rabbit holes, the rabbit, Wayward Rabbit, I'd love to talk to her one day in here. But she's working with natural fibers, I suppose, leaves and plants, and doing amazing natural dyeing with that.
She's really incredible.
She's definitely got it, and you've done a bit of collaboration with her.
Yeah, so I think that's the important thing, because natural dyeing is such a rabbit hole, and it's something that you really want to be able to do in scale, because it is so much work, just like weaving. Yep. I don't think as fiber artists we need to do everything. I think partnering up with people who we can collaborate with is a really fantastic way to see.
But what about the satisfaction of actually doing everything for at least a few times, and go, wow, I've just shorn a sheep and now I've got a, well, maybe not quite a sheep, but you know what I mean?
I don't know. I've shorn a sheep and washed the wool and carded it and gotten ready for spinning once. And I think that's good for me. I think that's enough. Now I can appreciate that it is a lot of work and I'm quite happy.
You haven't picked any cotton?
No, I'd love to. Yeah, it's hard to find cotton seeds in New Zealand.
Yeah, apparently it's hard on the fingers because there's lots of nasty spikes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it'd be good to try everything,
Of course. I mean, that's the artist's way, is to explore, to play, to it's like really important, isn't it?
Yeah, and just to have appreciation for every step of the process. You don't need to do that, but it's good to have a go and to know how hard it is. And I've done a little bit of natural dyeing, and I know that it's a lot, and it would be fun to do more of it. But I also can have just a really big appreciation for the people who are masters in their field, like Rachel Rabbit. She's really very, very highly skilled.
Yep, definitely. Wow, such a, you know, I wouldn't have, before this interview, I had no idea what we were going to talk about as far as, you know, I knew. And I'm asking these questions, talking to you, V, because I think, you know, that it's a bit of a unknown. I mean, we put on a piece of clothing and we have no idea. I mean, okay, that might be all mechanical stuff and they probably have rolls of fibre on you know, big rolls on pegs that all run through a big machine that goes and which is the same thing. It's just the next level up again. Mm-hmm. It's become really highly factory automated, right?
Yeah.
So now what you're doing is kind of, you've taken it back to that original fantastic grassroots.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a traditional skill. I think it's really getting lost in a lot of ways. So many people have stories when I tell them I'm a weaver that their grandmother did it or their grandmother did it, and they may still have this loom in the basement and they can't get rid of because.
Do you want it?
No, do you? No, definitely not.
How many looms have you got?
Oh, less than I have. I've managed to get rid of some, and they're hard to get rid of.
Yeah.
Because it is a bit of a lost art.
That's why that wonderfully big one sat so long where it was, and I was like, I can't let it sit. Someone must want it.
Yeah.
Really.
And it's a big part of the reason. So that's the loom that I'm using at the moment, and it's a big part of the reason why I don't want to get rid of it, even though I don't use it very much. It would be hard to get rid of it at this point. No one needs a loom like that, because there are so many of them out there just wanting homes. But all of this fiber art work that people are doing, the spinning and the shearing and the weaving and the crocheting and the knitting and the natural dyeing, and it's such a traditional skill for people. I mean, this is like the origin of the word spinster is a woman who learned how to work with fiber arts and now didn't need a husband to support her because she was able to be employed and support herself.
Brilliant.
And so there's a real history to people, particularly women, but people who...
And her story then.
Your story, yeah, to fiber arts. And I feel like it is a really important thing to keep alive because... fashion waste is one of the biggest wastes on our planet. And so even just having the appreciation of what goes into our fiber, what goes into our clothes, it means you just look at materials differently when you're making purchases, because you do know how much work has gone into these things. Yeah. Even if it's machines, it's still a lot of work.
Well, someone had to pick the cotton.
Yeah.
You know, someone had to. You know, it's insanely large amount.
Yeah, absolutely.
Amount. All that energy, and it if you look at sort of permaculture, it's certainly a real imbalance of, you know, energy input as to energy output. You know, I mean, we're not paying really what they're worth, are we?
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Mm. And that's why people kept coming into the gallery and saying, so cheap.
Did they?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yep.
I'll take note.
those are the people who know.
Yeah.
You know, and those who don't know go, that's expensive.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's education.
Yeah.
And we do have to educate. Have you got any vague plans of turning recycled fabric into woven pieces?
I think it's...
Is that something you'd love to do?
Yeah, I think it would be really fun to make rugs, and probably not sell them, but make things for my household out of things that can't be sold or donated anymore. I think that's a good thing to do.
You don't think this is a phase in your life of because you started doing other things and you're well and truly you've fully embraced the weaving. You don't think this is a just another phase that will kind of, you know, you'll get bored because your big brain's kind of had enough and you need to move on and do something completely different?
I don't think so, not with weaving. I think I got very challenge. Into my business for a while, and that's kind of faded a little bit. And I think with the economy, there were less people buying, but the actual love for weaving hasn't diminished. And when I think about my love for fiber arts, I mean, that's not a thing that's ever diminished in my whole life. I think I'll just keep wanting to get better.
So tell me, where do people find your work? And
Yeah, well, at the moment it's at the Art Vault in Takaka. But mostly I'm selling online. Mm-hmm. I sell under the name Earth Hive Handwovens. I have a website and I have a Facebook group. And I take commissions mm-hmm. a lot, so people will get in contact with me and we'll co-design mm-hmm. a really special piece. Mm-hmm. And that's a really fun journey to go on with people. And people are doing that for wedding shawls. I do some prayer shawls, baby wraps. And it's really fun to connect with a person and create something that's really special to them, because it also means that when you're spending that time and that money to commission something special, that's not going to just get passed on easily. That's something that's going to stay. It's really heirloom.
Definitely. That's something that must be pretty satisfying, is knowing that you're doing heirloom stuff that might be around for, you know, 400 or 500 years or more.
Yeah.
And end up in museums.
Yeah. That's
the sort of stuff that could,
Right? And exactly. And that's what you can hope for. Mm. That's what makes me feel good about creating these very expensive and high quality pieces. Sometimes I'll feel like I'm not appealing to just what people can afford, but realistically, I am creating something that is an heirloom piece.
You've got to make art for yourself first and foremost. That's always the bottom line. And if you're doing something for yourself that you're going to love, it's going to become one of those things. Are you ever going to teach? Is that something that you've got the... Because not everybody wants to or can.
Yeah, teaching weaving, you have to have a lot of equipment. It's hard to, if you're teaching crocheting or knitting, you need some needles and some, you know, hooks. But teaching weaving, you'd have to acquire a whole lot of looms. What I am really interested in, I have a beautiful studio at my house. At some point, I'd really like to open that up to be a studio that people can come and visit. People can see me, people can commission and engage in parts of their own pieces. I think that would be really fulfilling for a lot of people. Have more conversations with people about what I'm actually doing. I think it's a piece that you really miss when you see a finished woven. You don't see the loom. And like I was saying at the beginning of this conversation, the actual structure of the loom and the workings of it is such a beautiful part of the process. So just bringing people into that so that they can engage with that piece of machinery, and that would help their understanding of the piece that they're getting. Working towards that.
No, I totally get it. Bea Freitas, thank you so much today. It's been enlightening, and I really appreciate your time coming in this morning. And just remind everybody, your Earth Hive
Handwovens. Yeah.
Okay. And so get hold of Bea anytime, and she'll help you design your heirloom.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Grant, for having me.
Thank you. Good night.
Thanks.
Thank you for your company today. You've been listening to Art Talk Takaka with me, Grant Knowles. We've been talking to artists about their inspirations, passions and journeys. Art should comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. Brought to you by Art Vault Takaka.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.